This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
So, hey, everybody, welcome to episode 381 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Dimitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Oliver Weidlich in Sydney, Australia.
Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
It's morning here.
G'day.
exactly.
Yeah, it's actually just, I'm guess it's 5 p.m. here, so I'm ready to start winding down. So it's kind of interesting. You're just getting started. So you're in
the
future.
That's right, 7 a.m.
You're literally in the future.
I live in the future. Yeah. It's nice. It's good.
You're what, 14 hours ahead of me?
Well, I'm not doing the calculation.
Yeah, it's 7 a.m. for you, right?
Yeah.
So you're in the future. That's kind of cool. We love to talk about the future on this show and on my Star Trek podcast as well. But anyway, that's cool. So just a bit of background about you. So you've been in Sydney your whole life, or you, is that part of the?
Yes, I grew up briefly in Sydney, and then I moved to about an hour and a half north to the Central Coast.
Okay.
And that was when I was probably about 8, and then I moved back down in 2000 to start my user experience career.
Cool. And so your whole life has sort of been in Australia and like not much beyond that?
Exactly. A lot of travel for conferences, whether that's a WWDC or a more academic conferences like CHI or Mobile HCI globally. So I've had the opportunity to travel a lot with that and also just personally. So that's been wonderful, but lived all my life here in Sydney.
So getting from Sydney to anywhere else, is it always a bit of a hike? I mean even to go to Perth is like a 3-hour flight or something, right?
No, it's like going from the east coast to the west coast of the US, so it's five hours.
Wow.
We were doing a project across there for a bunch of months, so we had a team of about, I think, 6 of us flying back and forth to Perth a lot.
So anytime you want to leave Australia proper, it's a chunk of time, right?
It's a long way, yeah. But you get used to it. I think I've got no other frame of reference, so
yeah, that's true.
It's just normal, I suppose.
Yeah.
You'll have to come and visit one day.
Yeah, well, you know, it definitely is on my list. It's that and New Zealand is on the list of places I would like to go before I kick
off.
New Zealand
is beautiful.
I've heard. We interviewed once on another podcast. We interviewed somebody from New Zealand, and she said she went for 2 weeks and stayed for 20 years.
I could understand.
Yeah. So Oliver and I met in Beijing at the Let's Vision OS conference, and he did a talk there, and I did a talk as well, and you talked about user experience, and that's kind of an interesting thing. It's kind of the audience that I have is mostly iOS engineers and designers and developers, but so user experience is obviously something we're very much interested in. But I want to go a little deeper at first, because you, for us, you know, we all learned about this new word called spatial computing in 2023 at WWDC when Apple rolled out the Vision OS, Vision Pro device, and gave us this new terminology, which apparently, after looking at your website today, you've been involved in it for quite some time. So can you give us a little background on where you, and you did a talk like I did on the history of how we got to spatial computing, but can you give us some sort of background on where you've been what you've found along the way?
Yeah, so I think it helps to go back probably, well, it's nearly 25 years now. So when I started in user experience, I came from a background of psychology and of human-computer interaction, that exploration of memory, learning, perception, to look at how people interact with technology. Mm-hmm. And so when I came into the industry in 1999-2000, I got the opportunity to work across a whole different range of interface types, right? So obviously websites, but also at the time, you know, airline kiosks, we were looking at in-car systems, all sorts of different interfaces. And the one that really stood out to me was mobile. And, you know, we're talking about green screen, 3-4 lines of text on a screen. We were starting to get BlackBerries, obviously, in the early 2000s. And that area was starting to change. And I got really excited by that and sort of explored it on the side. Like, I was doing the mainstream consulting, usability testing, design reviews, things like that. but this aspect of mobile and the opportunity around that really fascinated me. And my history with Apple, Apple platforms, really goes back to, you know, my sort of my younger years of playing on a 2C and 2E, then the 2C, and then the Mac. And so I had this appreciation for Apple's user experience. And obviously, as the thousands wore on, we heard more and more about the potential for the iPhone. And certainly when the iPhone launched and then subsequent Android devices, of course, as well, that that combination of user experience and mobile really sort of came together. In fact, in 2010, I founded a company called Mobile Experience. And we were called Mobile Experience for 13 years, I suppose. And then 18 months ago, we changed our name to Contextual, which I'll come back to. So about 6 years ago, we were working on a mobile app for a client of ours in Sydney who look at Internet of Things for farmers. So they have a sensing tower that they put in the farm, and that can look at wind direction, soil, and things like that. And after that project, I got to catch up with a friend of mine, Mark Pesci, and he gave me a turn of the HoloLens. And I went, oh, wow, this is a new way of interacting with computing. HoloLens is augmented reality, optical see-through. So, you know, it's just like a pair of glasses.
This is about 2016, 2015, something?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yep, okay.
Yeah, 2016. And with that, we sort of explored this opportunity just for fun of what would a farmer's experience be like looking out at the field and looking at the different aspects that they, you know, around irrigation, about the weather information, about crop yield, things like that. And then we also went, well, you know, is the farmer likely to have this device? Oh, well, maybe the board of directors who manage multiple wineries have to think about these things too. So scenario planning, modeling, all that sort of stuff. So this new type of interface really intrigued me. And that really kicked off our interest. You know, we've got the day-to-day consultancy doing websites, responsive websites, mobile, all that sort of stuff, wearable stuff, all sorts of projects for our clients. But we started to explore this in the same way that we did with mobile. And I started using spatial computing, you know, probably 4 or 5 years ago because it really resonated with me as this new era of computing. And what really I like about it is that we can get stuff done, and it's a really can be an effective way to do your day-to-day computing, right? And I think a lot of people think about certainly VR experiences and certainly the sort of more traditional Oculus or whatever it might be, put a headset on, play a game, put a headset on, do some training, and then take it off. Whereas I'm really intrigued by ultimately what Doug Bowman from Virginia Tech calls, or and a range of other people call, everyday AR, where we will get to smart glasses and we will have experiences that are digitally overlaid on our real world. And I think the Vision Pro certainly is a step change in the devices that we have, from the Magic Leaps and HoloLenses to really move into this spatial computing world in a new way, because we can have these multi-app experiences around us to achieve our computing, you know, the tasks.
So before we get too deep into the Vision OS or Vision Pro device, I mean, I'm looking at your site, and I mean, you've played with pretty much, I worked on a project recently where I was brought in to do a Vision OS app, but the team there was very much involved in AR technology. So I didn't see a Magic Leap, for example, but they did have the Oculuses. They had some of the other glasses that you could wear. And I see on your site that you've been dealing with Magic Leap 2 and Snap Glasses and HoloLens and Tilt 5 and Oculuses and Magic Leaps, two Magic Leaps, I guess. And yes. I don't know what a Zapbox is, but is that a phone on there? I guess it is, right?
Yeah. It's it's like the Google cardboard thing.
Oh, I see.
But it's got controllers
So you've been thinking about this a lot longer from a user point of view in terms of what you could do usability wise with this kind of technology. Notwithstanding, Vision Pro seems to be at the pinnacle of quality and engineering, but this, you know, the work has been done ahead of time before Vision OS came along, right?
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of aspects which lead to that, and the first one is, again, that my interest in both the academic, from my, you know, my background in psychology and that human-computer interaction side of things, there is a whole side of augmented reality that, you know, started in the 50s and 60s,
right,
exploring this type of technology, right? So there is a rich history of academic research, mm-hmm, into how people interact with these types of devices and have experiences. So that is really intriguing to me. But there's been this sort of evolution over time. But with the HoloLens, we really hit the sort of the commercial reality of people being able to readily buy headsets, right? Previously, they were sort of strung together most of the time and so on. So we started to play with these devices and look at the different strengths and weaknesses, the different modalities that they use. So HoloLens, you can use gestures, you can use your voice interaction via Cortana, whereas devices like the Oculus, which are more enclosed, VR traditionally, like, you couldn't do the same types of things back in the day. And these devices have evolved, and we've got this map that we use that shows the evolution and the capabilities of these devices. You know, a lot of them used controllers. The Magic Leap, when it came out, Magic Leap 1 used a controller. And the Magic Leap 1 was actually, to me, a really amazing device in that it did consider this spatial computing, general computing experience. You could have multiple apps open at the same time in what they called landscape mode. So I could put a Kinect clock to the wall. In fact, I could magnetize it because it was able to leverage, you know, the understanding of the LiDAR map in the real world to do the surface detection, which we can't do in Vision OS at the moment.
Yet, yes.
In a shared space. Yeah. Hopefully, maybe after June. And it was a really rich and engaging, you know, there was a lot of focus from Magic Leap 1 around that consumer experience. Mm-hmm. Now, for various reasons, they've moved away from that and moved to more enterprise and sort of back to that more sort of bare bones enterprise experience. But that really highlighted to me that opportunity again of having multiple things going on in your world, and in fact located in different parts of your office or home or workspace, wherever that might be, that you could pin things to spatially anchor them and use that as a tool to potentially group information. Like, I might be working on a particular project and have all that in that corner of the room, whereas another project I've got in that corner of the room, or however you want to structure these things. And that really fascinated me. So we started to purchase these devices and play with them, and, you know, we explored with Unity and a number of different sort of platforms, which have all got their pros and cons as well. But all of it was in the expectation that Apple would probably come out with something. We weren't sure what it was, but it was definitely going in that direction, and we were fascinated by that.
So how do you see that? I mean, I sort of gave you the lead on the Vision Pro, but where do you see Vision Pro compared to the competitors? I mean, I like the fact that you don't have to use a controller, but I also get frustrated if I try and eat grape while I'm wearing the thing because it starts thinking I'm making gestures, right? And you mentioned that HoloLens also has, you can use your hands or whatever. So where do you, but how, in terms of quality, I mean, like, Apple's getting a lot of, I mean, there's negatives in terms of the weight, but there's also positives in terms of the quality. So where do you see it? If you were to review it in your 5-minute review, go.
Yeah, sure. So I think, you know, as with Apple generally, they do a great job of bringing that software and that hardware together, right? Mm-hmm. I think there are, as I mentioned, various headsets can use gestures, can use voice, can use gaze. So with the Magic Leap 2, we were playing with gaze to navigate and so on, and voice and gesture, but Apple have their level of polish, and it's that combination of small factors that then creates a great user experience. And, you know, we've had lots of people through our studio playing with all of these types of devices, and it's always a bit of a struggle to go, okay, well, now you've got to hold this controller and you've got to press the button on the front. Oh, which button on the front? Is that the top, two buttons, or is it the front trigger or the top trigger, or is it the touchpad? And you sort of, it gets a bit confusing. And then, you know, oh, the gesture, you've got to do the gesture with HoloLens and Magic Leap right up in front of the camera. Hmm. And now with Vision Pro, you know, I've done probably up to about 106 demonstrations of the Vision Pro now, getting people in to try it. And I've had no one who hasn't made through the first half hour and been able to interact with it pretty smoothly, right? Like, it does take a bit of an onboarding, but once they do that gaze, the gaze tracking, the hand detection, and once they sort of get the nuance of it, they're pinching and they're swipe, they're pulling, right, and they're doing everything. So it's that combination of bringing the right elements of interaction design and user experience and the quality of that, the digital assets, the resolution, that quality of those screens in the device, and the pass-through quality, which I think really differentiate this device. The other thing that I think is really important is, two other things, actually. The first one is the Apple ecosystem, right? So unlike other devices, the Magic Leap especially, but even Oculus and even the HoloLens to a large degree, I can buy a new Apple Vision Pro, I can hold my iPhone up next to it, and within a bunch of minutes, I've got my photos, my calendar, my mail, all the things that are in my Apple ecosystem are there just as another device. And that is a huge benefit, right? It becomes an engaging and useful device immediately. All the TV shows that I've bought on Apple TV, there they are. All my subscription music through Apple Music, there it is, right? Which you just don't get in the same way on those other platforms. And the second aspect is it as a transition device, right? So I think what they've done well is they've gone, okay, there's this whole new type of device that you wear on your face. It is big, it is bulky. This is, as people have been saying, this is the biggest and the bulkiest and the heaviest it's ever going to be, right?
Yeah.
It's going to get better. But they have allowed for you bringing in your current workflow, right? I can bring my iPad up for Notion. I can bring up my iPad for Slack and just start working. I can bring my Mac screen into this experience and get shit done, right? Like, this is, it's a really nice way of bringing people across from their current computing experience into this new computing experience. And we think that's a critical aspect to just wearing the headset more and more. Because if it didn't do that thing, I only put it on for this reason. Like, right, most of my team have got Oculus 2s, right, the Quest 2.
Yeah.
But we might only do a meeting every now and then it's not charged because I forgot to charge it. And then when they put it on and charge it, then they've got to do a system update. And, it's just all these things that become problematic. But if you're using this headset more and more frequently, then you realize the benefits of it, the more, it's that sort of virtuous cycle, right? And that's a great start. But we need to then look at the future state as well.
So the question on that is, so you mentioned that, I don't let my Vision Pro go without charge most of the time. And in fact, I've spoke to another engineer the other day who said he leaves it plugged in all the day at his desk, right? So what's your perspective on Vision Pro? Are you using it every day kind of thing, or is it?
Yes.
So you use it for part of the day, all through the day?
So I use it for part of the day. And at the moment, it's about 1 to 2 hours. And what I've found is, and this is on top of all the demos that we're doing. So what I've found is that at various parts or at various points in the day, I should say, I go, I know there's a bunch of little tasks that need to be done that are sort of coordination and review and things like that. And I've probably been at the desk, for maybe some of the morning, for example. There might be, maybe it gets to 10 o'clock. So I've been at the desk for a couple of hours. And if I'm at home, I'll go and sit on the lounge. If I'm at work, I'll go and sit. We've got a sort of a chair up the front that I go and sit in. And just stepping away from the desk, stepping away from a keyboard and a mouse, just makes things a bit more, I keep using the word casual, but it's not casual because it's efficient and effective work, like I'm achieving things. But it feels more casual because it's a more natural interaction. So I'm looking at, looking and responding at things in Slack and email. People email me about meetings, so I'll be coordinating with my calendar. And I can have these things up in front of me and sort of flicking between those experiences. And, of course, you can do that on a Mac, right? I've got a 27-inch in front of me. I've got two iPads next to me. I've got plenty of screens. But there's just something about sitting back, having it all there in front of you, and sort of being that master controller where those screens are far larger than I could have had in front of me. And I can move them around, right? I can
and your have exactly posture, the same you're sitting up experience. More, you're sitting more upright more. I find that too, as opposed to crunching over and looking at a laptop,
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I really enjoy and appreciate that little time. And, you know, I'll contrast that with, I think there are other work tasks that can be done on the Vision Pro, but the workflow just isn't there yet. So, for example, one of my team was working on a presentation and asked me to review it. And we use Box, right? Like Box, but Box.com. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we use Keynote for our presentations, right? So on the Mac, I would go to Box in the Finder. So it's integrated into the Mac Finder, right? And I would open that file. That file would open in Keynote on my Mac and write back to that file in Box, right? So I went, okay, well, there's a Box native app for Vision OS. And obviously there's a Keynote native app for Vision OS. So I went down and I sat down in my lovely chair and I opened Box and I found the file. And then you can't actually open the file on Box on Vision OS. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I can preview it, but that's not what I want to do. I want to open it in Keynote. I don't want to open
hand it off.
In
yeah. Box. Yeah.
So then I had to go back to the Mac at the front of office and airdrop my file from my Mac to my Vision Pro. And went back, sat down, opened it up in Keynote and went, okay, now I need to review. So I want to make comments. Oh, there's no comment functionality in Keynote for Vision Pro.
Oh, right? Really?
Now, I appreciate that these are, you know, we're very early days. I think, you know, I understand that it's been out for a couple of months now.
Keynote is running in compatibility mode because is it native or is it the
iPad version? No, it's native.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, yeah.
Native, yeah. So it works really well. Right. Yeah, and you can do amazing things with the Steve Jobs Theater and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But there's no commenting functionality yet. And in my mind, I went, well, that's probably the first use you would have for Vision Pro rather than creating keynotes from scratch. It would be editing, marking up, tracking changes.
Rehearsing.
Exactly. So I don't think those workflows are there yet. But again, we're super early on. And, you know, I think we will get there. But it's that flow of specific tasks and activities that need to knit together to make you an effective worker in the Vision Pro. And I find that a lot more of it is there than I expected. And you can be really efficient and effective, but there's obviously room for improvement. And hopefully we'll see some of that in June. And then some of it's just going to play out over years, right? Like with all of these types of platforms.
Yeah. And coming back to something you said earlier, I have iPads, I have phones, and I've grown up with them. Like, I've had the iPad since 2010. I've had the iPhone since 2007. And I've had a Mac all the way along. And to your point, there are things that I could, for a long time, there were things I could do on the iPad, and there are things I couldn't do on the iPad that I'd have to reach to my phone, or I'd have to go to my Mac, or whatever. And it's much better now with iCloud syncing, as you mentioned before. You can remote control your Keynote presentation from your iPad, or you can make it like when I was getting ready for my talk on the second day at the conference, you know, I was able to open up my phone and make an edit, or open my iPad and make an edit. Like, that kind of stuff works really well. But you're right. I think Vision Pro right out of the box is better in that sense of, like you said, that you could do that kind of thing. From an advice point of view, speaking to my audience, which is, I think, developers, what if we were doing Vision OS applications other than, you know, the sort of the side scroll or the two-pane, what do you call it, split view controller nonsense or the 3D volume stuff, what do you think that we as engineers should be thinking about when we're creating these apps? Because we're all creating from scratch, right now. And I think part of the reason why some things don't work quite yet is because the documentation isn't there. Like, we haven't, somebody hasn't forged the path to figure that out and write the tutorial and blah, blah, blah. Right. It's kind of my job, but so what would you advise us to do?
Yeah, sure. And just to touch on, I think that's the exciting part. Like, to me, is the stage of this particular platform is that we're all excited. Those of us who are in here and developing or designing for it are excited about it, right? Christian, our mutual friend, Christian Diaz, just popped me something this morning going, oh, I was playing with your app and I think, you know, you could do this. And I'm like, oh, awesome idea. You know, we looked at that in the early days, but we didn't think it was there. So for us, especially as user experience people, we're looking at how can we leverage the strengths of this platform? And we wanted to sort of create an extreme view on that in that we didn't want to do a 2D application. We believe in this 3D world, We think from a development perspective, that's a new set of skills that need to be honed. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity in there to, you know, how do you create and manipulate and manage 3D assets in your application? And so we started out by going, we want to do something small and simple. It needs to be 3D. We are thinking about this spatial computing experience. Therefore, we need to have something in this individual's day-to-day computing experience that can sit there. So from a development perspective, one of my team, Shane, is a UX consultant and did design computing at Sydney University, but he's been interested in Swift UI over the last couple of years. So he's been playing around with it. And when this opportunity came up, we sort of had three ideas and we were playing around with in the Apple Vision Pro dev labs. And one of them fell away because of HealthKit issues, because of the API we couldn't access. And then Shane went, oh, I'll give it a try. And so he's a brand new dev pretty much to Swift UI. And he was able to do this quite quickly. Like, I was surprised, really impressed with how easy we were able to put something together. And I think, you know, it's that opportunity to start from a clean sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to work for everyone because you might have a legacy product, right, that you need to transliterate across. And I think that's the trick is going. And Devin's talk in Beijing was really nice because it was going, I've got an iPad app, I've got an iPhone app. How do I make sense of this new platform using the current, you know, content purpose that I've got for my app? So there seems to be that opportunity to transition, but to think about this new in a new way from a user experience.
So a lot of apps that we've seen out there are kind of like they're either a 2D app that's been ported over, like a couple of mine like that. I had the opportunity to write the courses for Codico, so I got to play with the different modes of the two apps I know of are Day One and The Battery. I've lost the track the name of the app, but both of these are very similar in terms of their metaphor in that they are a 3D volume app, right? Can you talk a little bit about them? I'll superimpose some images from my Vision Pro.
I'll shoot you some through.
Okay.
So coming back to what were our aims as a UX consultancy, because we're not a development company, right? Like that's we work with partners or third parties or so and independent developers. So coming into it was we wanted to showcase that something could be done pretty quickly and easily. So we wanted to use Apple APIs. We didn't want to store any information, but we wanted to make it this visual, beautiful, aesthetically nice object that was useful. So we've created a capsule. That starts at the start of your day, whenever you want to start, 7 a.m., 10 a.m., whatever, and you can set the finish time as well. And within that glass capsule, you see these little coloured capsules of when you've got meetings on. So we're pulling from EventKit, and we just show those. And then when you look at them and tap and pinch them, then you get a bit of meeting information, right? And the idea is I don't want to have my massive calendar, because interestingly, calendar isn't a native application on Vision Pro, right? So when you open it, you've got this massive iPad window that you can go landscape or horizontal. But I don't need that open all in my visual field all the time. So we wanted this little object that you can put up in the corner of your room or on the shelf or above your monitor or wherever it sits, and you could just glance at it and go, okay, I can see what the time is. I can see we've got a little ring that shows you where you are in the day.
Right.
I've got a meeting coming up. It looks like in about 15 minutes. Great. That's good to know. Okay. And then, it looks like my afternoon's completely blocked out. So it's just this quick reference, this glanceable, what we call a glanceable information visualization, right? So we're just using data you've got. And so when we built that, when Shane built that in Swift UI, after that, I started looking around at battery indicators. And for me, I don't want a 2D battery indicator because I'm walking around my physical space a lot. And as soon as you walk to the side or behind a 2D window in Vision OS, you can't see the information
anymore. That's a good point. Right.
Whereas with a 3D thing, you can see it from anywhere. In fact, you can see through walls and I can see out in my lounge room that I've still got 50% battery, right? And I didn't want a lava lamp because aesthetically that's just not me. And I didn't want a big battery that looks like a battery. So we just went, look, we've already got this capsule. Why don't we just take that and put different information into it, right? So it was a simple second step, but it was fun. And I think that's the opportunity, right? Is our one of our driving things is the original, and maybe some of your listeners and viewers will remember the original Macintosh operating system, but it had a thing called desk accessories, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Which was the idea was that the Macintosh operating system only ran one program at a time.
Yeah.
But the team at Apple, or some of the team, worked out that they could put in lines of code to run these little mini applications like calculator and the puzzle and the notepad alongside the main application. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to go, how can we do something small but effective and useful? And so we've called them desk accessories. They are in excess rather than accessories, but that's just a fun side aspect. So we really see this suite of things coming to life, right, where you've got these different little things that can, little utilities that can help you in your spatial computing experience.
But that's interesting that using the 3D metaphor, because, yeah, that's funny. I hadn't, you know, obviously you guys being user experience would be more aware of the fact that the usability of a calendar when you're behind it isn't great, right? Say, I mean, mm-hmm. I was talking to Joe Chaplinsky a few weeks ago on the show, and we were talking about Vision OS and how the windows and things in the world seem real until you take your headset off, and then you're like disappointed because they're not there anymore. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I use your battery indicator now since you had me on the test flight. You're right. I hadn't really thought about the fact that it doesn't matter. I mean, I did sort of complain that it doesn't rotate properly when I bring it from the kitchen down to the basement. But yeah, you're right. It didn't dawn on me that I never not know how much battery I have, because I can just glance at it. I can look at the color of it and tell, am I charging? Is it green? Is it yellow? Is it red? I don't think I've ever gotten to the point where it was red, but you know,
good.
you know, but you're right. It's an interesting little metaphor, because that's the thing that, you know, I'm looking for, and I'm trying to talk about to the people who haven't tried Vision OS yet, in terms of, I'm looking for applications like, I don't know if you saw my talk, but the guy who walks around the stockpile and looks at the stockpile, and the LiDAR makes a model, and then he can tell how much rock is in that pile. Or the woman who wants to try, and she's setting up a new car, and she's choosing the color, and what does it look like in the mountains? What does it look like in the forest? And then she sits in a chair and has it rendered around her, so she can see what it sort of feels like to be in the car, right? So bringing, like, not so much, you know, putting a can of pop on your desk or whatever, like the little mini AR experiences we start with, but, you know, having this whole sort of experience come to you, right? So,
and I think that's going to be really powerful. And I'm a huge fan of the opportunity around embodied learning. So I don't know whether you've played much with the Jigspace app. They're actually an Australian company as well, Melbourne-based company. But one of their key things is, if you can have an object, whether it's an aeroplane engine or you know, a car motor or whatever it is, and you can have that in 3D and walk around it and pull it apart and have instructional design that's going, hey, the petrol goes in here and out here and then it goes into the cylinder, et cetera, et cetera. It's such a more powerful way of learning. Mm-hmm. And to me, we haven't quite all wrapped our heads around that yet. And it'll take time. And the reference, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but is with mobile, right? Like, a lot of people started by just taking a desktop website and trying to squish it into a mobile phone, right? It wasn't until, you know, that mobile first philosophy of Luke Rablewski and so on, who were like, you know, well, you know, you've got a camera, you've got a full screen, you've got GPS, things like Uber, Instagram, like, they couldn't happen until the smartphone came about with the technologies that it has. And that just takes time. We need to understand it. We need to experience it. We need to learn, you know, its strengths and weaknesses as a platform. But once we get our head around those things and start to experiment, play more with new ideas and new concepts, then I think it's really going to explode. Like, there's been a lot of comments about, hey, it's been out now for, what, 3 months or whatever it's been, and there's no, you know, there's no this, there's no that. This stuff takes time. This stuff takes years, like years and years. And that's why we're really interested in it now, because now's the exciting time in that, right? Like, things aren't bedded down. We've got the opportunity to experiment more than we probably will in the future. And I think that's, yeah, I think that's fun and exciting. So.
Yeah. It reminds me of the early days of the iPhone. I mean, like, and I can talk to that because I had an iPhone 6 months after it was, I mean, I think came out in July, had one by September, October kind of thing. Right.
I did too. I got my friend in the US to get me.
iPhone. Same deal. One of my friends went down to and he brought back two, one for me, one for him. But you know, I remember, like, it was BlackBerry'd back then. I mean, everybody had BlackBerries, yeah. And I was the one guy running around with a phone and an iPhone. And then the HTC came out, and oh, look at what the HTC can do with Windows and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, first of all, it's Windows. Bleh. But, you know, so for a long time, and there weren't apps on the iPhone. People don't remember. You couldn't copy and paste until the third generation of the phone, right? And then when the iPad came out, the first iPad didn't have a camera. You know, like, now, I mean, who takes a picture? Nobody takes pictures with their iPad. I mean, maybe one, you'll see a tourist every now and then holding up their iPad, taking pictures. But, you know, but these were like complaining that the iPad didn't have a camera was such a, like, silly point, considering, you know, all the amazing, you know, technology you had in your hand kind of thing, right? And I think that's where we are with Vision OS. I mean, I think we all know the Vision Pro is not perfect, but it's amazing. Like it takes you into that next sort of space in terms of, like, I look at my Vision Pro, it's right here beside me right now. I have no idea how well the battery's doing, right? Mm-hmm. I can tap the little battery and it'll give me a little, a green light, but that doesn't tell me why isn't there a battery indicator on the battery box? I don't know. Four little LEDs or whatever. And that's all you need.
Well,
right?
We had them on the power, like the
Mac had it. Yeah. Mac had it for a while. So, but I mean, but you're right. If I just want to, I just pop it on my head and look and see the battery because I've got your app running, right? That's cool. Anyway, I do want to, I know we have pressed for time, but I want to roll into, I like to talk to people about their background and their histories and things, but I don't think we have time today. But if you're okay with this, I've got this second section of the podcast where I do the questions. And it's based
I listen to Charlie's and I love that. Yeah.
Part of it's based on the Marcel Proust questionnaire, which there's a standard set of questions. And then I've thrown in a little bit of Stephen Colbert's silliness. So if you're seated comfortably, we can get started on this.
Let's go.
Well, obviously the first question is, what is your motto?
Yeah, I heard this with Charlie and then I've been reflecting on it. And I think it's explore and share, right? Like, a role that we've tried to play in the industry is to play around with stuff, whether that's mobile back in the day, whether that's wearable. You know, we've designed smart football jerseys, we've designed or worked on projects with smart yoga pants, right through to intelligent agents, right, where we've gone and compared Siri and Cortana and Alexa and, you know, and so on. And for us, it's explore a new space, understand those interactions, that the new opportunities of platforms and these types of devices or services, and then share that out with the rest of the industry, right? Because, you know, we're one little voice, but we want to share and be part of an industry and for all of us to learn together. So I think that's it. I think explore and share.
Cool. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
Oh,
I didn't say it would be easy.
That was in the the first sort of poke at myself would be hair, but that's too easy. I don't really care. Maybe ice. Like, I'm slowly losing my eyesight, so maybe getting my eyesight back would probably be the first one. I need it for screens, nothing else. But,
yeah. The eyesight's hugely important to me too. Who are some of your favorite writers?
So this is where I go. William Gibson. If I look at the shelf, it's William Gibson. It's Malcolm Gladwell. I really enjoy Monocle magazine, which is obviously a whole bunch of writers, but I like that curation aspect.
Cool.
Off the top. And then from a research paper side, Doug Bowman's work and his team at Virginia Tech on Everyday AR. They've got a bunch of really interesting research papers about glanceable augmented reality for smart glasses.
Cool. All right. So for the rest of us in the rest of the world, we hear that, you know, if you go outside in Australia, you can very easily be killed. So the question is for you, what is the scariest animal?
The funnel web spider, I think. And there's a story of, so I grew up in Sydney, and it's called the Sydney Funnel Web. And there's a story that my parents found a dead one halfway between the door and my cot when I was a very small child.
Wow.
We lived in an area that had them everywhere. And I was allowed to go and play in the garden and, you know, play with, like, look under rocks where they were. So probably Sydney Funnel.
Cool. I take it that's one that'll take in, is poisonous pretty badly.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, this is a question you've probably been preparing for, but what's the best sandwich?
a steak sandwich, I think, is probably, or if I was going to go the cliche, I'd say a Vegemite sandwich that, you know, all of us grew up on. So single slice of white bread, bit of margarine and Vegemite on top. But a steak or a sausage sandwich. So we have this big hardware chain here in Australia called Bunnings. It's sort of like Lowe's or what's a better,
maybe well, Home Depot. Better analogy, Home Depot.
Home Depot. Perfect. Thank you. And on Saturdays they do a sausage sizzle, right? So every bloke is going and a person, lady is going along to buy their things at Bunnings and have a sausage sizzle, tomato sauce.
What's your favorite word?
The easy one is love. The more thought through one, I'm going to go with understanding, because I think we have to appreciate people's different perspectives on things, and that's both in a global sort of humanity sense, but it's also very much a UX thing, right? Of the core to what we do is not design things the way that we want them. We need to understand the needs and behaviors of the people that we're designing for.
Cool. All right. What's your most treasured possession?
At the moment, well, apart from my family, but then on possession, the Vision Pro, yeah.
Vision Pro, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Where would you most like to live?
Ooh. So my second most treasured possession might be my windsurfer, a wave sail. So where I'd most like to live is on the north shore of Hawaii, on Maui. So go windsurfing every day.
Cool. Right. Flat or sparkling?
Sparkling.
Okay. Apples or oranges?
Apples. We just spent the time in Japan snowboarding at the start of the year, and there's at a place called Nozawa Onsen, and they have, that's sort of like where they grow all the apples in, or a lot of the apples in Japan, and they have so many different varieties. And just, we had this degustation dinner one night, and it had a whole list of apple juices, and it would, you know, is it, do you want tart or sweet? Do you want, you know, it's amazing. Good apples, mate.
Cool. All right. What's the most used app on your phone?
I would say, you know, the usual ones, the very unexciting ones, podcast. Ura is the one that I use every day.
You wear the ring.
I used to love Gyroscope, which is sort of this other thing which tracks around where you go, and I like that journaling aspect of being able to see where I've been and view that in a bigger data sense, like look at the annual review of where I've been, whether it's around the globe or locally or whatever. So yeah, there's a couple.
Well, what number am I thinking of?
Three.
Nope.
Favorite
action? No, I never do. Favorite action movie?
I love movies. I love watching movies, and then I forget movies like so easily. Pulp Fiction is not really an action movie. I watched Red Notice again the other night. I really love that style of silly action, you know, comedy.
What's the Red Notice? So I've forgotten. What's that
it's
one about?
Ryan Reynolds and The Rock and Gal Gadot.
Yeah. Super silly one. Right.
Yeah. A bit of mystery, a bit of cleverness, and funny.
Yeah, that was good. So on that same subject.
The Kingsman, all of those ones sort of, yeah.
And so on the same subject, Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, or Babylon 5?
I don't think I've ever watched Babylon 5. I like Star Trek. When I was a child, I used to hide behind the couch whenever Doctor Who came on, the theme music. So I've got to go. Star Wars is definitely the one for me. Return of the Jedi was sort of my peak sort of teenage, or young, probably, you know, 13 or whatever. Right. So, the original three trilogies.
So far, what's your greatest achievement?
Work or personal, or does it matter?
It's up to you.
Surviving's a good one. family, again, family's not an achievement. I think I'm really proud of the company, to be honest. Like, I've been working independently for 20 years now, and I really enjoy working with my team, and we do interesting projects, so that's for me.
Cool. Yeah. And so what words or phrases do you most overuse?
Don't know. I mean, there's the traditional ums and stuff when I'm presenting, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't think I have them. I have, certainly when I'm like on iMessage or something, I'll say, have a good one a lot. It's sort of my sign off, like, especially growing up. So maybe.
Cool. And what's the one thing you own that you should really throw out?
Oh, probably. I have pretty much every device, every mobile device that I've ever owned at the office. So I have a whole museum of devices. So there's probably some Nokia 3310s in there that I should get rid of.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, you could take them apart and put them on the wall like people are doing with their iPhone 1s and things like that, right? So I have a couple
Nokia
of them.
Nokia 3310s probably not worth the time in it.
Yeah. I think the people who do the grid, people who make the, who do the mounted ones, they do have some Nokias. Yeah. So
I've got the 4S. Because of Siri for that one.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, I've got a couple of other deep questions, but I think we'll... Oh, last one. Have you ever asked anybody for their autograph?
No. No. I heard you ask Charlie that one, and I don't think I ever have.
Ever had his book signed?
I've met a lot of famous people.
Yeah.
Necessarily. Yeah. Or had or I've seen them, like watched them in concert or seen them perform or something, but I've never had the chance, I think.
Never had a signed print or a book signed at all?
No.
Really?
I did, because when I was growing up, so I started windsurfing when I was 12, wave sailing, and I got, there was a famous windsurfer, and I asked the sail company to send me some posters when I was 12 or whatever, and they sent me a signed one. That was probably Scotty O'Connor was the Australian windsurfer.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up here. So if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you, like on your socials and what are you up to next?
Mastodon's the main sort of Mastodon. I'm Oliver W pretty much everywhere.
Okay.
Mastodon at mastodon.social. Okay. And then LinkedIn is probably the main work channel, but Mastodon I'm on. Contextual. So our website is contextu.al. So we went hip and dropped a vowel.
Contextual, cool. I was going to tell you before the show or during the show, but my son's last name is Kuhlein, right? And so he, it means little cow in German.
Oh,
but awesome. he always said it was Kuhlein, which is cool one. So I was I did the same thing. I looked at your name because you know it's interesting what the words translate into. But it's one Weidlich, right?
Weidlich, yep.
Weidlich, with a D in the middle. If you break that up into two words, it comes out as absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There you go. So it's very much a German name, is my understanding. But my father is Hungarian, so there was Germanic sort of tribes or took on German names in Hungary, and he came out in the 40s to Australia. So cool. I've had the opportunity to go to Hungary and Germany a few times. So both cool. Beautiful countries.
Right. Well, my name is Timitra, TIMMITRA on the Twitter machine, the Mastodon machine, Instagram, all the various places you can find me. And so until next time, we'll see you in the future.
Thanks, Tim, and thanks for doing what you do.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. Please leave a comment on the website, and if you can, please write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. So use the hashtag AskMTJC. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. We'll